Boker Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Nedarim, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, is daf Lamed Chet. And we just got finished going over many of the inyonim that are considered to be the Iturei Seferim, or the Lashon Seferim, or the various aspects which we call the Kri, Velo Ksiv, Ksiv, Velo Kri, and other inyonim of Limud Torah, such as the difference between Mikra, Mishnah, Pisuk Taimim, Machlokas Rav and Reb Yochanan, all of which are strangely out of place in Masechet Nedarim, at least on the surface. And actually, as we started discussing yesterday, are really a profound insight into the nature of the meaning of words. Because remember, Maaseh Bereishis is achieved through language. Migdash is created initially by Bezalel through language. Kochim is created through language. This becomes the root of Nedarim that we discovered at the beginning of the Masechet, and therefore the interrelationship of the language of the Torah, particularly when you talk about Kri Velo Ktiv, Ktiv Velo Kri, you could see the relationship of such ideas to Pivli Vaishovim in terms of language as well. And the question is, to what extent the impact of language is on the nature of our reality, in the sense it actually forms reality when it's Kaviyochel HaKadosh Baruch Hu's language and speech, and that it forms our personal reality when it's Nedarim, and that the interface between those two levels of a virtual reality and Bria as we find it is actually the nature of the Sinas HaTorah, and the way that the words of the Torah, which is, of course, again, Kri Velo Ksiv, in other words, there's a Torah Shebiksav, Torah Shebaalpeh, and the interrelationship between them, have to do with the final determination of reality for us and for what is mistaken for an external reality. Anyway, we got up to the third line over here, now that we've got everyone's attention, I hope, and we're up to the third line on Dam Flamet Ches, Omer Aleph. And we're ready to go, other than the profound disappointment that apparently Gavi is not taking us on an Erev Shabbos tour, but at least this way we'll be able to concentrate. So, l'chaim. On the third line, Omer v'achabarad, the Ma'arava paskin l'adem psukim l'tlata psukim. One of the things that we spoke about, that we learned from the Kriya of Ezra, was that he stood up, and he read the Sefer Torah with all of the issues that we spoke about, the inyanim of whether it's Pisuk Taimim, or just with Targum, or with, certainly with Pisuk of the Psukim. That was the beginning. So we were medayik from each word in that Pasuk. And here, even though we said that there is a halacha l'meshe b'Sinai on these inyanim, nonetheless, when it came to this Pasuk, so here's this big machlokas. We've shown him whether this means that literally that there was a machlokas as to what the actual Mesira was. That's a little bit difficult to believe, but there are some who read it that way. However, others learn that this is Nogea, not the way that the Sefer Torah is, but rather it's Nogea, the difference in minhag between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel in terms of Kriya. In other words, they used to be Gomer the Torah every 3 years, and then it became, everybody took on the minhag of Bovel, in which it became every year that we finish, and because of that, they would actually split this Pasuk into three ways. That's the Shita that's brought in the Shita, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it was a difference in the actual Masorah. But anyway, what is that Pasuk? Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Hinei Anochi Ba Elecha Ba'av Ha'anan, which starts at just the beginning of the Pasuk. Over here, they took that Pasuk and they made it a unit to itself in the Kriya. And then the continuation of the Pasuk, they split up each one of them into something else. And then it says, Ba'avur Yishma Am B'dovri Yimach V'gam B'cha Yaminu La'olam. So then it says, "Ve'yaged Moshe divrei ha'am el Hashem." That's one very big long pasuk in Eretz Yisrael. They showed that in terms of the sentence structure, it's a very run-on sentence. and that you shouldn't confuse necessarily sentences with psukim, so that there is a time in which a pasuk will be magdir interrelated ideas, which we would have seen more as a paragraph, as a pasuk. Om Reb Chama Barebi Chanina. Once we're talking about getting money out of learning, it's fascinating because Moshe Rabbeinu got rich, but he didn't get rich from teaching. He got rich from making the luchais. So lo eshir Moshe, elam bipsolatan shaluchot. So since he had to carve out the luchos habris after he broke the original luchais, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him that you can keep all of the pieces that you actually carve out, that you can keep for yourself. And this, of course, was a tremendous gilui in which a solid piece of sapphire was given for the luchais. This became very rich, but nothing to do with teaching. Shenemar psul lecha shnei luchot avanim k'rishonim. What does that mean, lecha? Psulatan shochayeh, that the pisul of the luchais should belong to you. Omer Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina, but from the same lashon we can derive that lo nitna Torah ela l'Moshe u'lezaro, that the Torah was given only to Moshe personally and to his family. Shenemar k'tav lecha, and it says this together with psol lecha. So just like psol lecha, you understood that psulatan shall be yours. Af k'tav lecha, it means that what is written, that is to say, the actual tzivuyim of the Torah, is shelcha. The thing is that Moshe nahag batov atayin unetana liYisrael. Moshe didn't want to keep all of the good for himself, so memela he gave over the Torah to Klal Yisrael, and that's what we refer to when we say tov ayin hu yivorach. Now this is very strange because, the pasuk we understand why it would refer to Moshe. Moshe is called but the question of Moshe Rabbeinu being the only one who was given Torah, we just learned that the entire learning, which is has to be done for free, is derived from Moshe Rabbeinu, because he says, so the entire idea was that I was commanded to teach you. So if that's the case, how do we say that it was meant only for him? Makes no sense. No? Because you could have understood that to mean Vooti Tziva, and then L'lamed Etchem. That was something that I decided to do on my own, because I'm a Tovai. But it says, Re'eli Madati Etchem Chukim U'Mishpatim Kasher Tzivani Hashem Elokai. Doesn't that mean that Hashem Elokai was Betzava me to teach you Chukim U'Mishpatim? Not necessarily. Oti Tziva, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Betzava me all of this, and I gave it over to you, Vanilachem. Oh, come on, but we have a mitzvah. We have to, everybody has to write down the Sefer Torah, and that Sefer Torah is the Edus, that it's yours. Ata kitvu lachem et hashira hazot. Maybe that just means to write Parshas Haazinu. Hashira lachud. But the rest of the Torah, maybe you could wait to Moshe. Ah, oh, man, it says, Lamanti Eli Ashira Zot Leib Bivin Yisrael. So how could we possibly say, if the Shira itself, just the Shira, without connection to the Torah, that's an Edus, the Chobo Yolam? No. Obviously, it means that everybody is Bechuyav in the Torah. It's a crazy drasha. I don't know what is he saying. What did Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina mean? Now, what he meant was, Pilpula the Alma. He meant that everything, of course, was given Torah. And of course, it was entirely the Kisvu Lachem is the mitzvah Ksiva Kol HaTorah Kula, and so on, as the Gemara's Medayik elsewhere. But the point is that the approach to what it is that you can derive from the Torah, that was initially given to Moshe in terms of Pilpula. In other words, you find that people are able to be mekabel on themselves the mitzvah of lima Torah. They don't have a Torah. So the way that they learn Torah, even if they learn it together with halacha, and it becomes to them, you know, very valuable and very lemaisa, but there is something of the engagement of the mind in the ins and outs and intricacies of the interrelationships between the various sugyas of the Torah that they don't even know exists. It's not just that they don't know how to do it, it's almost as if they learn the Torah in a different milieu. And the truth is that that aspect of learning, which is called Pilpula, was really given not as an essential reality for you to be able to live with the Torah. It was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, which was the ultimate Torah. He wanted everybody to have that same kind of access. And Memela, that Mesera that we have, what we call the Ish Bipi Moshe Rabbeinu, is not simply in terms of Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, but it's in the entire approach that a person can learn, but can only learn by being part of that Mesera. So that people who rely on a textual learning of the Torah, and they don't have someone that they were Mekabel the Torah from, who himself was part of that Mesera, you can always tell. It's an amazing thing. You can always tell, even if you don't meet them personally. You can tell them how they write about the Torah and how they think about the Torah. They are choser, the pilpula, which is pilpula bi'alma, but it's a totally different world. And that's what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina was saying, that the relationship of Moshe to Torah, he wasn't mechuyev to give over to everybody, but he did. Oh, my, by the way, it's very interesting that actually, the idea that the Shira itself is what was meant by the Kisvulachem is merumas in the Zohar, and there's actually a sefer which was written by the same one who authored the Nefesh HaChaim, so Rav Chaim, and he writes how it is based on the Zohar that every letter of Shiras HaZinu represents another one of the Taryag mitzvahs of the Torah. That's why there's Taryag, this Taryag Osios. So he goes through each one of them. They actually wrote a sefer in which all of the Taryag mitzvahs, according to the Rambam specifically, were merumas in each one of the letters of Hazinu. It's like remarkable. Anyway, maybe I should have put that in the essay on Hazinu, you know? It could be. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, once we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, this was quite a character. In HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashre Shechinato, Yela Al Gibor, V'Ashir, V'Chacham, V'Anav, V'Chulan Mimoshe. So this is understood to mean not that everyone, this is how the Mefarshim explained, doesn't mean that everyone who has Ruach HaKadosh. It means that everyone that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Mashre Shechina in terms of Nevi'ahs, and it was sent to speak to Klal Yisrael, he had to also be someone who stood out in Gvura, Ashiros, Chochma, and Anova. And we learn all of these things from Moshe. Gibor, how do we know that Moshe was actually a mighty man? He was able, on his own, because Omar Mar, Moshe Rabbeinu, Pirasso, he was the one who was poris to get the entire Oyel, and nobody else was able to do that. Now, how that means that he had to have been able to spread it out on a height of Eser Amot, Orech HaKeresh, and he was able, that means that he must have been at least tremendously tall, so probably he was one of these, like, big, you know, basketball players, probably, you know, 7.5 feet, together with a body that goes along with that kind of stature. I mean, he's not going to get the ball through the hoop if he's some little schlep, is he? If he's so thin, well, not necessarily. Maybe he was tall, but he was very thin. He might have been cut in. I mean, I don't know. How does that prove that he was a mighty man? Elamin ha-dinkro. We learn it from this pasuk. Dichtiv hetfos b'shnei aluchot v'ashlichem yal shtei yadai v'ashabrim. So if Moshe Rabbeinu was able to take the luchos and throw them. I don't understand how much these luchos weighed. I mean, each one, we're talking about the luchos being Orchon Shisha, Rochbon Shisha, Ovyan Shlosha, which means that's each one. And together, then we have 2 times that. Good heavens. And this was solid sapir, which is immensely massive. So this weighed, who knows how many hundreds of kilos. And Moshe was able to take them and threw them with such power that he broke them into smithereens. So he must have been extremely powerful. That's very interesting because the Rambam paskins this Gemara, but he says, Gibor, means Gibor in his Midas. And he brings the Gemara, Kilashono, and so on, and everybody asks, but what do you mean? So how in the world does the Gemara bring a raya from the fact that he was strong enough to actually throw the luchas, right? It seems to be mamash astira. However, the idea is merumas in this week's parasha, the solution. Because what happens? Yaakov Avinu goes, we've got like hundreds of people gathered there, and they're all going to get together to roll this stone, which must have been, you know, required 5-10 people to push it. And then we don't have enough people yet, so we're not able to be mashket adarim. So then when Rachel comes, so Yaakov comes over, he takes the stone and he throws it, he starts taking, and like everybody's looking at what? But if you take a look at the tefillah of Geshem, so it goes through, remember, each one of the stanzas is talking about one of the different characters that we base it on. So the one that speaks about Yaakov Avinu says, the lashon of the poem is Yichat Lev, V'gal Evan Me'alpi HaBe'er. You remember that lashon? Yichat Lev? What does Yichat Lev have to do with it? The point over here, that this is the way my own Rebbe Reb Chaim explained the idea of Gibor B'midais Hab, is exactly the way that Agiva is in here, so I don't know how many admirers of the power of one I've got over here, but at least we can talk to Gavi. Oh, there we go. Alon is here, and he was the one who actually gave me his volume of the power of one. So that's exactly how PK explains it, right? That the thing that you have to... Ari's there? Okay, good. All our South Africans are here. Naftali, I don't know, he's loose today, but maybe he's driving. You can't... But in any event, if you recall, there's a whole analysis by PK of what his power, in terms of what he's able to do as a boxer, that it comes entirely from Yichat Lev. It doesn't come from physical strength. And it's a constant idea of a mental keach that you have to be able to be miyached yourself to achieve things that you have no idea how it's going to be done. So the idea, therefore, was specifically, the Rambam doesn't hold that there's a stira, but that in order to be able to act on that level, it means that you are in a position of crazy stories that you hear of people who are going to save their children's life by picking up a car that's, I mean, crazy things that happen entirely from Yichat Lev. And therefore, the Rambam understands that the two are totally interrelated. He's a chacham, because Rav and Shmuel both point out that Chamish...
Japanese martial arts, they call it kokoro. Kokoro means good heart. So it's
just
the same concept of one heart.
Yeah, okay, good. Thank you. Rav Ishmael Damer Tavayo, 50 Sharei Bina, Nivru'u Ba'olam. So in other words, the idea of Adam, the greatest that you can give him, this is referring specifically to Moshe, who was going up to Har Sinai, and you made him just a little bit less than Elohim. What does that mean? It means that he was given all of the Sharei Bina except that which is impossible for a living Nivra to achieve. So that's the Kilo Yirane Adam V'chai. And an Anav, Tichtiv, Ayish Moshe, Anav Mo, that it says Beferish. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Kol HaNevi'im Ashirim Hayu, Minolon Mimoshe, Mishmuel, Me'amos, Umiona. We have a good basis to say that since we have four of the Nevi'im that were given to Klal Yisrael, we're very rich, that's a mida of Nevi'im. Where do we see this? Moshe says, Lo chamor achad me'em nasati. I never took even a single donkey from you guys. Now, what does that mean? That he never stole it? That he never took it without paying? I mean, what? La fukim an deshoker below agra? So that's really great. I never stole anything. Thank you very much. So, I mean, who steals? Ella must mean that afilu ba'agra. I'm so rich, believe me, I never came on to using anything from any of you people, okay? I'm totally independent. That's what he's saying. Well, maybe it's because he's so poor, he can't even afford a taxi cab. So maybe that's the shot. I never took a cab. Exactly. Because you don't have any money. So the only reason to anihu? No. The fact that Moshe is rich, we know from Solacha, like we said before, that the psolat of the Luchot, Nishalcha Shmuel, because Shmuel says the same thing. He says to Klal Yisrael,
Okay, I'm giving you over now into the hands of this melech that you want. So I want to hear from you clearly as I retire. Anubi neged Hashem v'neged Mishicho. Et shor milakachti v'chamor milakachti. Same thing that Moshe Rabbeinu says. What does it mean? Ibechinam? What does it mean? Did I steal? Of course not. Mafukeman deshaka bechinam. What it must mean is the same thing. Afilu b'sachar. But again, how do we know? Maybe that just means he couldn't afford to hire a taxi cab. So dima da aniu elami halcha utshuvato aramata kisham beito. What does kisham beito mean? Omar Rava komokom shalach beito imo. So according to this Gemara Bepash, which is not the way Rashi explains it elsewhere, which is that which we had in Brochas actually together, that what it means is that he lived in a motorhome. And that he was able to go wherever he went, he was able to bring everything with him. So there the raya would be, if he could afford a Winnebago, he must have had a lot of money, you know. That would be, but the pashtus of the Gemara here is that wherever he went, he owned a fully equipped home. So he would just go into his home. This is his vacation home. And this is the place. And this is his vacation home. And this place. And so therefore, wherever he went, he had his bias with him. But that would mean that he must have been quite wealthy. Oh, my Rava, gadol ma shenemar b'Shmuel, yoter mi ma shenemar b'Moshe. Because Moshe Rabbeinu says, lo chamor echad mehem nasati. That means that I didn't, as we just said, I didn't take anything even in terms of hiring a taxi cab. But by Shmuel, it says, afilu b'ratzon lo zechara. That even if a person wanted, with all his heart, he was dying to have, to be able to let Shmuel go with him, and Shmuel would pay him or whatever, he would still refuse. It's a beautiful understanding in the Lashon of Ratzotanu. Ratzotanu means you didn't even get us to agree, right? So that was the point, because Shmuel, as the Ran explained, Shmuel was chayshir, that yes, people want. You know, it's the same with the mitzvah of Rebbe and Rapinchas ben Yair, remember? So the Rapinchas ben Yair refused to eat. So Rebbe said, what, are you mutter? No, I mean, what do you mean? You won't eat by me, but it's a brochen. So Rebbe Pinchas says, no, that's not the point. The point is that people are often moved to say that they want something, you know. Yesh, that ain't lo, but he wants so much to give, he can't afford it. And yesh, that yesh lem, but they don't really want. So that's the pasuk that he actually brings Rebbe. Echol v'shitei yomer lecha v'libo balimcha. Yeah, he'll tell you, sit down, eat, drink. But it's eating him up alive that you're drinking up all his best liquor. So he doesn't really want you to eat and drink. Okay, so therefore, Shmuel was a chayshet, that even if he would allow people to do him as an honor, he wouldn't even do that because he was afraid that actually they were just being pressured by the fact that they needed to show him honor. Amos, dichtiv, vayan Amos vayomer al amatzia. Look, man, I don't make money on being a Navi, you know? I can tell you I'm not a professional Navi, okay? My Naviyas has nothing to do with my profession. I can tell you, no Navi Anochi, and the lo ben Navi Anochi, I'm a Bukir Anochi, I'm a rancher. And I'm a boleis shikmim, and I'm an expert on dealing with sycamore trees, which means, as the Targum of Rabbi Yosef puts it, are more geti ana v'shikmin li b'shefalta. I am a master of cattle, which means that he's got big ranches, and I own a bunch of sycamore ranches along the coast. Okay, so then he's saying, that's how I get my money. You know, so don't think that I have any kind of ulterior motives in my nevias. Yonah must have been very rich, because it says, Vayitain Sikhara Vayeredba. He went to Yafo, finds this ship, pays the Sakhar. What do you mean pays? Well, obviously, I mean, what do you mean? Had to buy a ticket. Was going to take him to Tarshish without buying a ticket. It doesn't mean he bought a ticket. He means he paid for the whole thing, Sikhara. That's the point. Now they say to him, you know, he comes. Yes, sir. First class ticket. Departure is in 2 days from now at noon. 2 days from now at noon? Oh my God, by then I'm dead. You have to leave now. What are you, crazy? I'll pay for the entire boat. Oh, okay. So he rented the entire boat. And Omar Rabbi Ruminus, what that means is you should know what it cost to rent a boat. Sechorosho Svina, Avi Arba'at Alafim Dinrei Da'ava, 4,000 golden dinarim is what it cost to rent that boat. So, okay, he must have been quite wealthy. Mi Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Bitchila, Haya Moshe Lomei Torah Umeshakra. He would learn Torah, but he would keep forgetting it. In the end, it had to be given to him in terms of his memory as a gift. What is Vayitena Moshe? That it was actually given as a matana. And that brings us to the great gift that was granted us with our Kapitan, who Baruch Hashem is with us this morning, at least in name.
Added body.
Amazing.
Not quite so. Zuk de Helika Mishnah.
So, what can you do and what can you not do in the event that you are Mudar Hana'ah? So, we spoke about taking off his shekel. We spoke about the Din of Hanan, about whether you're allowed to pay money to his wife, if you've left town, those kind of issues. We've talked about the idea of paying off his loans and the concept of Mavriach Ari, taking off truma for him, the difference between being a shliach or just doing him, the difference between using your own money for the truma or his money for the truma, and so on and so forth. This Mishnah continues that you are allowed, v'zanet ishto v'et banav, ava pishu chayav v'mizonotan, you would be allowed to feed his wife and children, even in the event, is how the Ran understands it, even in the event that you would be chay, that person that you're feeding, his family, is chayev to feed his family. What does that mean in the event? Remember that the chiyev, the absolute chiyev, as far as children are concerned, are only to maintain children under the age of 6. After that, there's no chiyuv of child support, except as part of the normal dinim of tzedakah, and Beis Din will force you to, if you can afford it, to make sure that you feed them. So in the event that you have a family that you have to feed, what would that be? That could be maybe in a case where you married a woman who had children, and she made a deal with you that you would maintain the family and so on. That could be a case. Obviously, it could be a case that the children were under 6. But whatever it is, in the event that you would be chayev b'mizonotam, so you would still be allowed to be zanet ishto v'et banav. Now, the question is this dafka liba de chanan? And therefore, it would be because of the meniach ma'otav al karen ha-tzvi, like we spoke about in the opening Mishnah of this series. Or is this different? So the Ran says, look, I mean, we might be talking about a case over here where he's mazing them in order to be Mekayim the mitzvah and not in order to pay off the other guy's loan. It has nothing to do with them. I want to give money to his wife. I see poor people and I want to take care of them. So that would be mutter. Even Aliba de Chanan. V'lo yazunet behemto, but you cannot feed his animal, whether it's tmi'ah or whether it's tahora. Why is that? Because the more you feed the animal, so then the more you're actually giving him, because the animal becomes more and more valuable as it becomes better taken care of. So if it's fattened, that's good. Now, the Ran understands that the Mishnah is learning specifically about a case where you're fattening the animal, meaning you're not actually giving the animal what it needs to survive, because that would be usur, because that is a direct hana'ah, where you're feeding, you're keeping alive his thing, you're giving him money, obviously. So that's not a mavriach ari, that's a direct gift. But what it's talking about over here, according to the Ran, is the guy is taking care of his animal, he's feeding the animal properly, and you fatten the animal up. So the more it's fattened, the more valuable it is, at least as food, whereas not everybody agrees to this, because Rabbi Eliezer Omer, what do you mean? You can make bein tmeah, bein tahorah, it's usur? Why would it be usur? If it's not a kosher animal, what value is there in fattening it up? The fatter it gets, the less it works. So you wouldn't want to have a big fat horse. You want to have a big powerful horse, right? Or a big powerful donkey to pull your plow. So therefore you can be zanata tmeya, because you're not doing him any favors if we're talking about fattening. But eno zanata Torah. But you couldn't do that. You're right. You couldn't do that if it's an animal that's tar. Amru lo, so the Chachamim said to Rabbi Elazar, what, I understand, what's the difference? Ma ben tmeya l'tohora, I mean, ultimately, whatever he does with the animal, if he wants to sell a horse in the end for glue, you know, it's still worth more money if it's fatter. Amar lohu, because a Torah, the nefesh of this animal belongs to the Lord. That's l'shamayim. He doesn't have any control of its life, but gufa shelo, its body basically is his to be able to eat. While it's alive, he can't eat it. It's true. But after he shechts it, it's just a goof, and then he can eat it. And therefore, the fatter it is, the more valuable it is. That I agree to you. Masha'im came, the tmeah, he doesn't really get it in any way. It's always nafsha, vigufa, lashamayim, because he's not allowed to eat it. So what is he doing? This person who's fattening his animal, he's making it worth less for working. Omrulo, afat tmeah, nafsha, lashamayim, vigufa, shalo. Look, I mean, he could still sell this if he can no longer work. He could use it as dog food, right? So, I mean, why are you saying that of necessity, that it's not going to be a valuable thing for him? Obviously, according to Rabbi Elazar, we're taking a look at currently, this is the main purpose of the animal, is to do your farm work. So then you're doing him no favors in making this animal spoiled and fat. Omer Rav Yitzchak Bar Chananya, Omer Rav Huna, Hamudar Hana'a Michaveiro, Mutar La'asilo Bito. He can still marry off his daughter to him. Now, we have no idea who the pronouns are. Someone who is Usher can marry his. Who's marrying his daughter to whom over here exactly? Who is Usher to whom? So what exactly is the case? Havibar Rav Yitzchak, I don't understand. But Mayaskina, what exactly is the situation here? So we're talking about a case where the father of the bride is not allowed to be mahana, the prospective chosen, right? So hare moser lo shivcha l'shamsho. So then why are you saying he can give him his daughter? I mean, I'm assuming when you say give him his daughter, you're talking about a katana, which means that you need the father to be able to make the marriage. So, I mean, like, that's the best thing you can do for him, no? I mean, while you're giving him your daughter, you're Moselo Shivcha L'shamsho. This guy is going to get, you know, 20. I mean, this is the way, actually, once upon a time, apparently people got married, and their wives took care of them, and then were Mishamish them, and so on. Yes, indeed. And, I mean, you know, even if you need someone to rub your back in the shower, I mean, definitely she's going to do it for you. That's what the ksuv is. The chiyuv imor and the ksuv, right? So how could he possibly be mahana, this guy, with the ultimate gift of a wife? Ella, so that can't be the case. Ella's got to be talking about, I guess, that Rav Huna is talking about where the chosan is not allowed to be mahana, the prospective father-in-law. So therefore, what would be the chiddush? To say that it's not considered to be giving you hana when I marry your daughter. I suppose if the guy is Asur Bahana, it certainly wouldn't be giving him hana to marry his daughter. But no, that's not the point in the Gemara. The point over here is that in taking over his daughter, you're taking over the support of his daughter, right? So then that would mean that you might think that even though you're taking away his burden of supporting his daughter. Well, I don't need Rav Huna to tell me that. The Mishnah said much more than that. The Mishnah said that you're allowed to simply go in there and feed her. And over there, the Av is still chiyuv. That has a chiyuv to feed her. And afal pi kein, the Mishnah says, is mutter. So koshikein, if you're going to take away the chiyuv, that then you're not really doing him a favor. At that point, you're feeding her, and he's not getting anything out of it because he's not b'chuyav in it. So I don't understand why I need Rav Huna to tell me something less than the Mishnah. It doesn't make sense.
Says the Gemara, okay, but you made a big assumption, and that's why it doesn't make sense. Your assumption was that we were talking about a ketana. Okay, but why do we have to say that? It is what we thought, that the father of the bride is not supposed to be Mahana the Chosan, because that's usher with a netter. But who said we're talking about a katana? He was talking about a bogeret, and since it requires me da'ata, so she's the one that's accepting the kiddushin over here. He doesn't have any real rights to her, Minatayra. And nonetheless, you know, he has to agree because it's going to be family pressure and so on. So even though he's telling his daughter, yeah, it's okay, you can marry this guy and so on, ultimately, it's entirely up to her. And so because of that, it would not be a violation of the neder. So now, okay, we can learn the word midata in a slightly different way that the Ron suggests might be, which is that if she asks him, in other words, she wants his advice. So, but it's not that he pushed her in any way, which would mean that if he did, that maybe it would be us. Anyway, Tanya Namihachi, the way that we just understood it is clear from the Braita. Hamudar hana'ami chaviro. Asur lahasilo bito. So one that is osir, there's a neder in which he's osir bahana'a. So then that person cannot give him his daughter to marry if she's a ketana and she needs to be given. Avo mesio bito bogeret umidata. She doesn't need to be given and he is simply handing her over to him, that's okay. Omar Rabbi Yaakov, let me tell you, other things that we simply understand as givens in terms of the Isurim of a Neder. Up until now, the Mishnah has been defining what the nature of Hana is that is Usur in the Neder. However, that was all in terms of what is the definition of the benefit. Here, I want to tell you other things which remain Mutter, even though there's an Isur Hana'a in the neder, not because they're not considered to be Hana'a. They are considered to be Hana'a. They're mutter because it is understood that they were not included in the person's das when he made the neder. And we'll see that the understanding constitutes essentially an umdana, and it's not dvarim shebelev, and therefore it defines the meaning of the neder. For instance, suppose a father wants his child to be able to learn without interruption. And this kid is a very family-oriented kid, and he wants to help out in the house, and he likes to be, you know, maybe to cook stuff for Shabbos, wash the floors, or help his father go shopping, or whatever. So the father makes a neder that he is not going to get any hana from this kid. Now the kid can't come home to do anything as biyoser b'hana, so the father wouldn't be allowed to be nene from it. So he figures this way he'll stay in yeshiva, and he'll become a big Talmud Chacham. So he's Madir Beno le Talmud Torah. Nonetheless, we understand that that doesn't mean a literal Isra Hana'ah as it would for someone that's your enemy. So in other words, if the son comes home for Shabbos, he's allowed to fill up a bottle of your soda stream so that the father would be able to drink it from him. He didn't mean to Asr like little things like that that are not going to cause him to end up not learning, or he could light a candle for him, meaning so if you turn on the light in the room, he's allowed to turn on the light in the room, which would not be the case if it would be Asur Bahana'a. Rabbi Yitzchak says, he can even go beyond that. He can make you some barbecued herring. Remember our president. So he can be tzola you a takatan. You can even get a little bit. He can open a tuna fish can for you too and make you a tuna fish sandwich. So these kind of things are understood that, of course, the father didn't mean literally that it's an Isra Hana'ah. So even though this is obviously not the same as the issues in the Mishnah, but it boils down to the same thing. We don't consider this in terms of the way we understand the neder. We don't consider this to be included. Om Rabbi Yirmiya, Om Rabbi Yochanan, Hamudar Hana'ah Michaviro. Yeah? Who's that?
Just a quick question. How does this neder get off the ground even? Because I thought Nedarim couldn't contradict Mitzvah Daraisa. Surely Kibbud Avaim is Mitzvah Daraisa.
Yeah, but Kibbud, yes indeed, but you see Kibbud Avaim is dependent on the Rutzen of the father. Because Kibbud means to do for him what it is that he wants to be done. That's his kapitza. Ritzon Adam Zeh Kvodo. You know, I'll tell you an interesting story. My father, Zatzal, many years ago, was utterly flabbergasted when he had sent the kids, his daughters, to Beit Yaakov. And they come back and they tell him that they would really like to bring him his slippers, but they were taught in school that they shouldn't bring the slippers until he asks for them. Because since a mitzvah v'aisa is a higher madriga than an ain mitzvah v'aisa, can you imagine? So like, the school destroys the entire issue of what it means to be mishamish someone and to understand his das, so that they should be mitzvah v'aisa more because he asked for it. But ad kedei kach was the confusion about when the nature of kibud av kicks in. This to him at the time was like the height of Frum insanity. And that was before Frumkeit was even discovered. So you can imagine what things are now. Anyway, so says Rabbi Yirmiyah that Rabbi Yochanan says, if your mudra anami chaverai, so then you would be allowed to pour him a cup of shalim. Now, what exactly is a cup of shalim? So some say, in Bavel, they use that word to be referring to the kos that is given to an avel. So kos shel beit ha'avel. And remember, we had the whole thing about you're supposed to have 10 cups, and then people started getting drunk. And so, okay, so some learn that's what it's referring to over here. And again, why is that true? Because we understand that the type of things that are not a personal hana'a, and they're things that are expected socially and are part of the normal intercourse between people, as opposed to this is a specific relationship, that was never meant to be included in a neder of hana'ah. Therefore, since it's called pouring a cup of shalom, that was not what the person would ever have wanted to answer. And, I mean, anybody can relate to this. You know, somebody that's an enemy, all of a sudden when he's an aval, everybody's nice to him, you know. So before I shaft him next time, I'll go in there to be Menachem Aval. And others learn here in Eretz Yisrael, the Kodesh Shalom, that's the cup of hot water that you give to people when you go out of the Beit HaMerchatz. So the over there, if you remember, the Gemara says, you know, you can't warm up the outside of your body without warming up the inside of your body. So how do you not have a nice hot cup of coffee while you're in the hot tub? Okay, that sounds like a great idea. So these are the hot toddies idea. Okay, so but the issue was that once a person was like in there, I mean, he was really in, you know, in good shape. He's got this beautiful bathrobe on him that they give him in the bathhouse over there. And he's got the coffee. I mean, it's the best coffee that they give you when you come out. It's only right to share. So the derech was that kosher shalom, which would mean social peace, it was the equivalent of somebody walking into a pub, somebody saying hello to him, and it's expected he'll order him a beer, right? So let's have a bud for this guy. Okay, so it was the same thing there. So that was called the kosher shalom because it was part of social peace and understanding. So it would be obvious that he wouldn't have meant to answer himself on that. I mean, it makes him look terrible also. So he certainly wouldn't have wanted to answer that. Okay, now we get into the machlokas, the Tanakam and Rabbi Eliezer, about whether you see a difference between a behema that is kosher and a behema that is not kosher. So Tanya, Yoshua ish Uza Omer, you can, for sure, bizan avadav v'shifchotav haknaanim, so you could fatten them up, even if they're kenanim, v'lo yazunit behemto, bein tmea, bein tohora. So over here, this is like the chachomim. So what he's pointing out, according to Yoshua ish Aza, is that everybody would agree, even the chachomim, that when it comes to the avadim, over there, fattening them up is not doing him
any favors. My time, huh? Well, Avadam v'shivchotav ha'knaanim l'menacharuta avidan. So there's actually two different lashonos over here. The lashon that the Ron had is l'menacharuta avdina, that the purpose of having these slaves is for keeping your house clean. And therefore, the fatter they get, the less clean your house is going to be. So if somebody fattens up your slaves, he's doing you no favors. That's the point. But the girsa that we have over here, l'menacharuta, would be, are they meant to be eaten? So in other words, the behemoths, fine, you could say that there's value to the behemoths because you can always sell them or throw them to the dogs. I'm assuming that's not what you do with your avadim knanim, and therefore there would be no value that he gains by having them fattened up other than spoiling them from ever doing any work.